Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by ManaPro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. ManaPro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, National Spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds Program, and author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday, November 15th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the world, and I mean from around the world, including Norway. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button at our homepage there at Blog Talk Radio. So if you're listening live, you're automatically in the chat room. You're probably in there as a guest if you haven't registered. So take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our hobby and passion of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope to take a moment to do this today, and again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by our good friends, ManaPro. ManaPro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that ManaPro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. ManaPro, nurturing life. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America. But picture a chicken wearing an apron, and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster, and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink.
A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your HenSaver aprons today at HenSaver.com. That's HenSaver.com. It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, VermexUSA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites. Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you so much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is terrific Tuesday. Yes, it is. And we are broadcasting live here from the homestead in southern Georgia. And my good friend, co-host, Pat Foreman, is broadcasting live and joining us from California. So let me officially welcome her to the show as the official co-host here. Let me go ahead. Here we go. Time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate, author of many great titles. Workshop speaker extraordinaire and compost queen herself, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, how's everything? How's everything over there on the
coast? Yeah, I'm so sure you crack me up. What makes an official co-host? what's official versus unofficial?
I don't know, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
It sounds great, yeah. I mean, I just kind of puffed up a little bit when I heard that. Gosh, I'm official. Oh, gosh. So you're the official chicken whisperer. So there you go. We're now official. We can just deem ourselves totally appropriate for the first time.
I'll make sure that I get you an ID card that you can proudly carry in your wallet.
Yeah. Oh, I want to wear it around my neck. I want people to know I'm official. I want the world to know that finally, I've arrived to officialship. Maybe that would give us more authority, you know? Maybe we ought to consider making ourselves really documented official.
And I'll get you a special Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer press pass, and you can carry that around your neck.
It'll say
press in big black letters, and you'll have access to the UN and access to the White House and access to
the scenes.
There you go. Press
Maybe
pass
that could get that. Us that that first flock there at the White House that we've been talking about for the last couple of years. I could go in with that. Hey, I want a certificate suitable for framing as well. I want to put it on my office wall.
Absolutely.
I'm official.
You can please send a certificate suitable for framing to everybody that sends 1995 to Chicken Whisperer Incorporated.
Hey, Pat. I know you know this already, but you know, there's already birds at the White House and in Washington. They're called turkeys. But we do need to have a flock of chickens at the White House to go with their garden. But there's already plenty of turkeys in Washington. We don't need to add any more.
Well, now, Andy, you know, I just came from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and I know for a fact that the turkeys would take that as an insult. So we got to maintain their dignity. You know, those little wobbly, gobbly things do have dignity.
Actually, Tally in the chat room says that you don't really want a press pass. You want a tiara to wear on your head.
One of those little decorative things on top. Huh?
The poultry queen, as it per se. The poultry queen.
Oh, God. No, I don't want to be a queen because I don't want to have control over anything else. Just me is more than enough.
Yeah, that would
be a poultry king. Go ahead. Yeah, we'll make Jen the poultry queen. Jen can be your queen.
So for listeners who hadn't been listening earlier in the week, Pat is on the road. She went towards the end of last week, and she went out to Wichita, Kansas, if you didn't know where Wichita was, and she participated in the annual conference for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and then she flew on out to California for a 5-week book tour, specifically for City Chicks, but she has other great titles as well. And so she yesterday, in fact, she had to leave abruptly because her bodyguard came up to her and said, "We have to go. The limo has arrived." And so they swept her into the limo, and off she went. And then they had to clear out the paparazzis for getting all the pictures. In fact, I think I saw you last night on TMZ, Pat.
Right.
Honestly, as you were walking through the airport there, TMZ got a glimpse of you with their cameras. So,
well, now, if you're going to tell a story, tell a good one. That's a really good one, Whisperer. That's a really good one. Where I am right now is not in the limo, but I've got this cute little eggmobile, I'm going to call it, because it's just the best little car. Got a little sort of hatchback, and I'm on 101 driving north to Santa Barbara. I got a morning workshop I'm going to give to the school up there, to the Wild Roots at the Fairview Gardens. So I'm really excited about that, to be able to, and they've got chickens, so we can have some hands-on chicken whispering demos and just kind of play with the chickens a little bit. I need to get a chicken fix. I've been away from my chickens now for almost a week and week plus, so that's where I'm headed. Hey, Whisper, guess what happened last night? This is incredible.
Oh, my gosh, I don't know. With all your groupies crowding around you, I'm almost afraid to ask what happened last night, Pat. You know, you are on the road.
Stop. No groupies. No, I gave a presentation in Ventura, and they're trying to change their laws because they currently have laws that they can have chickens, but the restrictions are so prohibitive that hardly anybody can. You know, the 35 feet to set back and get 100% of your neighbor's consent. So we spent quite a bit of time talking it was 2 hours, and spent quite a bit of time then talking about just how to get chickens legal and strategies to do that. We went over the myths versus the facts that you and I put together, and that was really, really great. And of course,
neighbor's permission.
Man, it even comes up, and I go into reaction. I just start, that is a civil liberties violation. I can't believe it's an insult to even mention it. I mean, don't even bring it up. Don't go there. So went through the whole thing about what you say. You know, you have to have your neighbor's consent to get pit bulls. How about machine guns? You know, how about kids? So they're set now to get their laws changed, and they have a really strong green movement here. They are moving along to get greener and lighten their carbon footprints. There's a lot of talk everywhere I go about carbon footprints, which is wonderful. So, great group. I'm having a good time here in Southern California. Yeah.
That sounds like a plan. That sounds like you're doing good work there. And I believe from our phone call earlier this morning, you'll be here for about 30 minutes, but then you're going to be swept away by your bodyguards into the limo and head off to a school. We're going to be talking to some school kids about the benefits of chickens and sustainability.
Yeah, that's at the Fairview Gardens in Santa Barbara, and they have what's called a Wild Roots school. Isn't that cool? A Wild Roots school. So I'll be talking with them for a couple hours.
Okay. There's a difference there, because when I was in college, that's right. I was sowing my oats in college. Isn't that what you used to call it? You know, I'm out sowing my oats when I go to college. But you said it's not sowing your oats. It's something else.
Yeah. Wild Roots. They're talking Wild Roots. So, not your oats. Your wild. I hope they're heritage oats or heirloom oats that you sowed, not these new GMO oats. We have to be careful about that now. You know, they're not the same. They're not the same. Oh, dear. Well, anyway, so I'm all excited about that. I love talking with kids, and they're so wonderful with – they can be sometimes so wonderful with the chickens. So, yeah, it's coming along. Now, I have to be a little – I'm on 101, and I'm just about ready to pull off, so I'll pull over once I get off this highway here. So, we've got a great show lined up today.
We have a fabulous show lined up today. In fact, we've got Andrew Odom, which is the founder of TinyRevolution.us. Him, his wife, and his new daughter have embarked on this lifestyle, which we call the minimalist lifestyle. Yes, you still wear your clothes during, even though you're practicing a minimalist lifestyle, so don't get that confused with others, but a minimalist lifestyle. And I was talking to a friend here that doesn't live too far away, and we were talking about who was going to be on today, and she was like, you know, I live in a tiny house too. And then she described it, and she said, but not probably quite as tiny as they're talking about being, you know, 12 by 30 or 12 by 25 or whatever, on a tandem axle a trailer. And not some may call it extreme, but they're doing that because a lot of their reasonings is they don't want to be bogged down and with debt. They want to be debt free. I think that's the best thing for themselves, their family, this country, their children, and so for many other reasons. What do we really, really need? Let me tell you, it's a great, I think maybe a good lifestyle change for a lot of people. And so I know when we moved, we downsized, and I was going through shoes last night. We brought some things up from her mom's house. Down below us, of course, they live full time in Atlanta, so we can use their house for storage right now. And I was going, what in the world? So we've got a whole donation pile now. We've got a couple of winter jackets we're going to be donating. Things like, why do I need this? Why do I need that? What was I thinking when I bought this? And we've got not only just Andrew Odom with TinyRevolution.us, but we've got two other very, very special guests. And I was just introduced to them yesterday, so I've got to get over here to let's see. Oh, hang on. Where to go? Here we go. Over here, and going to take, because they have a great Facebook page as well. So give me just a second while I find it, and then pull it up here. Here we go. It's and of course he just sent it to me, Andrew Odom here. Christopher Carson Smith and Marette Moeller are a filmmaking a couple who, at the idea of Christopher, decided not to just join the tiny house movement by building one, but also filming the process. Since their first clip, the movie has become less about hammer and nails and more about how families across the nation are taking to a smaller way of life. And so they do also have a Facebook page we'll announce here a little bit later. So today's show is all about living that minimalist lifestyle, tiny revolution, tiny homes, tiny. And I know you and your ex had written a book many years ago. How many years ago did you write that book about tiny houses, Pat?
Oh, it was just about 10 years ago. It's called A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, Having Upscale Living in Just Right Houses, because so many houses are so ill-fitting for what the people's needs are. So, yeah, I think the tiny house, we got to go to that direction, because the 85% of American households are single, and we just don't need the three-bedroom, two-bath houses to pay that big mortgage on, because because you're so concerned about resale value, and that's what's kind of driving these big houses all across the. So this is great. I would love to see their video on how they're getting the getting their tiny house built. Well done.
Perfect. So it's going to be a great, great show lined up for everybody to today, trying to do 16 things at once here. Perfect. And let me get over here and, you know, hey, it's one of those things, switchboard, chat room, Facebook trying to get the correct information. The chat room is slowly but surely filling up today. We've got Andreas, and I believe he is actually listening and chatting from Norway. Yep, we've got world
Wow. Here.
Norway. Not the first time either. Remember, Pat, we've had listeners mm-hmm. live in the chat room from Taiwan and Singapore, and of course all over Europe and even South America and Canada. So all over, and so very proud of that. We got Anna Raven. And thank you very much for joining us, Anna. We got Bluegrass Mama, BYP386, East Dallas Dave, and a lot of guests in the chat room today, probably coming over from the Tiny Revolution site and the Tiny Revolution, the movie site. We've got Moto Clown, we've got Pamela, Poet's Wife, Sweet Potato, Carmen, hello. Susan's in there. We've got Tally, Vanessa, and Walter, and it's going to continue to fill up as the day goes on. But tomorrow, being Wednesday, we're going to have Arlena Schott's going to be here, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. So she'll have a great topic. She'll be talking about gardening. And then Thursday, we have poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae. She's going to be here. And then this coming up Friday, I'm not sure what's going to happen. I have to do my husband obligation here and help my wife. She's got her monthly field trip that she does with her job. And I always try to help her out. And so this month, it happens to be on a Friday. So I'm not sure about Fun Friday yet. It may be a Facebook Fun Friday. I may be able to somehow try to find a way to broadcast live there. But I know I gotta focus on her and help her the best I can with the field trip they're setting up and things like that. So we'll just see about Friday. But since we do have a lot of guests and possibly first-time listeners today, I want to take just a moment, and then we'll go to commercial break, and we're going to welcome Andrew Odom and his guest today for the interview to tell you a little bit about this radio show. It's not all about chickens. In fact, it's by far not always about chickens and poultry. That's a big part of the show. I would say it's about 60% poultry, and the other 40% is sustainable lifestyle, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, sustainability, and agriculture, solar power, wind power, and just kind of go through our guests. So if you're a first-time listener, you may choose to come on and become a regular guest. In fact, if you're a guest in the chat room now, scroll down a little bit on your computer screen, and you'll see you're automatically in the chat room, but you're in there as a guest. Just below the chat room is a little key or a button you can push to register. Just takes a moment. And then you'll get your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can join us. You only have to do that once. And then every time you come back, you'll come in the chat room as that as your chat name. But to give you an idea, on Mondays, every single Monday, we're so proud, every single Monday, to have Peter Brown, founder of First State Vet Supply and also known as the Chicken Doctor. He is here every single Monday sharing his depth and knowledge about chicken health. And then on Tuesdays, the very first Tuesday, we have famous heritage chef Steve Pope, who joins us the first Tuesday of every month. The second Tuesday is the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. The third Tuesday is Andrew Odom, founder of TinyRevolution.us, about living a minimalist lifestyle. And then the fourth Tuesday is the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities with the author Christine Heinrich, where they discuss. Wednesday, we've got the first and third Wednesday. First and third Wednesday, we have Garden Wise Living with Arlena. Garden Wise Living with Arlena. And then Thursdays are great. The first and third Thursdays, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD poultry scientist, comes and shares her vast knowledge about poultry. The second and fourth Wednesdays, I must say, some of my favorite shows here on the radio show. We welcome Richard Frudenberger. He is the publisher and chief technical writer at Back Home Magazine.
Whisper, I lost your signal. I'm not sure if others can hear me in the chat room. And I'm not sure if I'm going to lose my signal or not, but I think I'm okay. I've got a pretty strong one. I can continue on with the schedule. We're up to Thursday with Richard Freudenberger. And, boy, Richard, I was going over my list of the topics that he's covered over the last couple of years since he's been with us. I think it's over a year and a half, and it goes everything from firewood to – there you go. Whisper.
I just disappeared there for a minute. I heard this click. And I was in La La Land. So, yeah, I guess you were continuing on with Richard Freudenberger.
With the schedule, yeah, talking about back home. And you know, the topics that Richard Freudenberger has covered is absolutely astonishing. Everything from crows to wolves to chopping firewood to building ovens. I mean, it's a back home magazine. It's just like we've got their archives live when Richard comes on the show. I learn something absolutely every time. Gourds. I remember the gourd ones. And a lot of the stuff he's talked about, I've used either in my garden or my life. So.
And predators. Really cool. He's had great shows about the different predators as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get to Fun Friday, Freaky, Frivolous, Frolicky, Fractured, and often rated R for Rooster, Fun Friday. It just doesn't get any better. Spread the poultry power and the poultry love.
Yes, power to the poultry, power to poultry. Yeah. Speaking of traveling, nothing is in stone. And in fact, by this Friday, I'll announce our schedule for next week. I'm not exactly sure yet if we'll have if we'll take the whole week off, so Pat can continue her book tour. Me and Jen can spend some time with the family for the holiday.
Okay.
We broadcast Monday through Friday, pretty much 365, other than holidays. So we'll see. We may broadcast Monday and Tuesday, and then take Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday off. Just depends on where we're going to be, and will we have connectivity and whatnot. We will for sure take Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday next week off, but we may, and Monday and Tuesday are right now questionable, so I can at least tell you that regarding that. And then the Christmas holiday, that's still about a month away, and so, oh my gosh.
Oh no. You said the C word.
I said the C word. Folks, in case you didn't know, it's been kind of a long-standing here happening that whenever the C word is mentioned, then all of a sudden somehow a Christmas carol clucked by chickens is brought on to the show. So you just never know. We got a variety of Christmas songs. it's clucking Christmas songs. So that's just something. Go ahead, Pat.
It doesn't matter whether it's June, July, or August, if you say the C word. It seems like that thing just pops up. It's the darndest thing. Bring a little holiday cheer, no matter what time of year it is.
That's exactly right. So someone in the chat room is like, what the heck? So just explain. whenever the C word is mentioned, then you're right, Pat. Even if it's July, we can have that in July as well. So just a little fun we have here on the on the radio show.
Yeah, if it's not fun, we're not going to do it, right, Whisper? It's got to
exactly
be
right.
Fun.
It's got to be fun. It's got to be fun. So very good.
What I'd like to, if I could, before I take a break and then I need to exit, I'd just like to say that if folks would like to see my speaking schedule, just go on SB, for that's short for Santa Barbara, sbpermaculture.org, O-R-G, and the whole schedule's on there. Pretty well set, but so there's quite a few to be announced. Tomorrow I'll be speaking at the Faulkner Gallery, and that's in Santa Barbara, the Faulkner Gallery from 7 to 9. They're right there in downtown Santa Barbara, and then the schedule just keeps unfolding. So I certainly would, if you've listened to the talk show, please come up and introduce yourself. I love to meet the faces behind the chat room, especially, but if you're a listener at all, please do come up and say hey. So that's it. I wish you were here, Whisper. We ought to do a tour together sometime. We could have
fun. There's the talk of a bus tour, a Power to the Poultry bus tour from like New York to L.A. or something, and where you know people can buy a ticket on the bus and we can head across the country spreading the poultry love. So oh my goodness, how fun
would
that
be? I'll take the Learjet. I'll just meet you there.
Okay, that's fine. Learjet in the limo, and I'll take the bus, and then my old 83 Ford F-150, and put a little camper top on the back, and then we'll just head across the road. And
oh dear, what fun! Well, listen, I'm going to sign off at this point. I need to just do a little bit of a shifting to get ready for the kids. Most of my presentations are headed for adults, so I'm going to have fun with the kids in this one, and I'll tune in tomorrow then and check in on Wednesday.
I'm sure that you are going to fit right in with the kids with all of your fun chicken jokes. I'm sure.
Yes, I have a strong inner child that I have nurtured for decades. Yes. never want to let her down.
Lala, I hear the commotion in the background. I hear the limo pulling up, and I hear your bodyguards whisking you away as we speak. So Pat, I hear all the automatic cameras going off, and I can almost see the flashes going off as they whisk you into the limo to go to your next event. So Pat, you have a great one.
I know that's what happens when you travel, Whisper, but I don't quite have your level of fame. It's a very modest group here. Not a fun group. Anyway. Well, anyway, it's great. So I have a wonderful show today. Sorry, I'll try to tune in and listen to it later afterwards because, of course, all the episodes are available on iTunes. You can download them or listen to them 24/7, and that's one of the advantages. How many back episodes do we have now, Whisper?
We're probably approaching 500, if not already. I think we've already over and exceeded 500 episodes because we're coming up in February, 3 years of broadcasting. So we're probably over the 500 mark.
Wow. I think we should have a big celebration.
Have an
egg toss.
Have an egg toss.
Okay. Well, anyway, got to exit stage left here. And, of course, always and forever, may the flock be with you and with all our listeners. God bless everybody. I'll tune in tomorrow. Bye-bye.
All right, Pat, thank you very much for calling in. Of course, she has to go and get lots of great work done spreading the word about the wonders of sustainability, which includes keeping backyard poultry. All righty, we're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to welcome Andrew Odom of tinyatrevolution.us, and he's got some guests that are coming on too to talk and really explain this tiny revolution, the minimalist lifestyle, the tiny home movement, and what that means to them and what it should mean to us. And so we'll be back right after this short break. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey.
technology you can trust. You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to go over here to the switchboard, and first I'm going to bring on our good friend, regularly scheduled the third Tuesday of every month here, Andrew Odom, founder of TinyRevolution.us. Andrew, how are things going there?
Doing well, man, doing well.
Good, good. How's the little one?
It's been a morning.
Yes, and you'll have many more of those mornings, I'm sure, and those days. But nothing beats it, does it?
No, I wouldn't trade it for anything. In fact, it brought about some good conversation, of course, on Facebook, which I always love.
I just participated.
it's very interesting, you know, what people suggest and what they think you should do and what's right and what's wrong. And, you know, it always boils down to the same thing for me. It's very much a personal thing, parenting is. And while it's great to receive as much advice as possible from other folks, you know, ultimately it comes down to the idea that every parent is different and every parent has to do what's right for them.
There you go. And then we'll just have to see how their kid ends up being when they're raised.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
The truth will come out. The success and of how they did things will come out in the child later on, I'm sure. So
I'm pretty sure we're raising part of the 99%.
Oh my goodness, that's good. I gotta love it. Gotta love it. Hey, I'm going to go ahead and also go to the switchboard because we've got a great show and we just want to get right to it. Our guests and your guests for today's segment, and we've got them on air right now, I believe, calling in from Skype. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are y'all doing? Andrew, I'll turn it over kind of to you for the introduction, and then we'll go ahead and get started with this interview all about living a minimalist lifestyle and tiny house living.
Absolutely. Well, I do just want to say first, I know that the Chicken Whisperer crowd is probably wondering what's happening to their show here because, more and more we're increasing our spectrum of topics that we discussed. Last month we talked about the Occupy Wall Street movement and how it affects the food sourcing and how it affects urban homesteading and rural homesteading. And we've been talking, of course, a lot about Tiny Revolution once a month, and now we're just flat out talking about tiny houses and welcoming in some new guests today. So I really want to encourage everyone in the chat room to feel free to send questions at me while we're doing this interview, and I'll fit them in, and just to enjoy the new topic because I think it has a lot to do with with some of the same ideals that the Chicken Whisperer crowd supports and lives by. So if I could, I just want to introduce our two guests, Christopher Carson Smith and Marette Mueller are, and I think, did I pronounce that right, Marette? Is that how you say your
last
name?
Yeah, that's great.
Oh,
you got
I'm awesome.
It.
I'm awesome. All right, so so Christopher and Marette are a filmmaking duo, if you will, who decided just a little bit a while back to, well, at the endeavor of Christopher, decided that they were not only going to kind of go off-grid a little bit more and pull out of the day-to-day, but that they were going to enter the tiny house movement by doing nothing less than building their own tiny house. And so as the story goes, Marette had this idea, okay, I'll see your building of the tiny house and I'll raise you one film about it. So they decided not only would they build a tiny house and enter into the tiny house world and the world of off-grid living, but that they would make a film about it. And what I've noticed is that as they continue to film, it has become, the film itself has become more about people and families and individuals and couples and just all walks of life learning to live a little more minimally and with less of a carbon footprint and less of an impact on the earth and on our resources that we have, which, as you can see, kind of goes right into what we're talking about typically on Chicken Whisperer. So I want to welcome you, Christopher and Marette, to Backyard Poultry.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, hey, Whisper, anytime, man, feel free to throw out anything if there's something you're interested in finding out more about.
Oh, I'll have some questions as well as I'll try to keep an eye out on the chat room and get some questions in there as well.
Excellent, excellent. So real quick, guys, if y'all could just tell us, you know, where are you at? Where are we at in the project? What is the first things first? Just tell us about the project. Just give us the elevator pitch about this movie.
Sure. So the film follows Christopher's attempts to build his own tiny house from scratch. And he has no building experience. He's never built anything before. So it's kind of following his learning process of, you know, building this house with his own two hands. And then in addition to that, we're also kind of exploring the larger tiny house movement and interviewing other families around America who have chosen to downsize their lives. And what we're really kind of interested in overall is kind of this idea of home and what makes a good home. And that's kind of the questions that we're asking.
Excellent, excellent. So where are y'all located exactly? Because we have a broad spectrum of people listening in regularly on this radio show. So where are y'all located? You don't have to give us the Google Maps address, but where are y'all located?
Yeah, we're in Boulder, Colorado.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't quite catch it.
Boulder, Colorado. I spent some time in Boulder. I actually lived in Longmont. The only time I've ever lived anywhere outside of Georgia for 1 year, lived in Longmont and commuted into Boulder every day for work with a software company there. So beautiful, beautiful country out there.
Oh, definitely. I actually lived in Longmont for a little bit myself and also commuted to Boulder.
Very cool. Very cool.
And so we're building in Boulder, Colorado, but the plan is to actually haul Christopher's house because it's on wheels up to a piece of land that he bought in the mountains, which is about 2 hours away outside of a tiny town called Hartzell, Colorado, which I like to say is so remote that sometimes it's hard to actually get the weather report.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Yeah, that you had mentioned on the blog, I believe it was, or maybe in the article that came out just the other day, that even using your iPhone, you can't really find where exactly the tiny house is. I think that's fantastic.
It's true. It's true.
I don't, Christopher and Rhett, y'all don't know this yet, but Whisperer lives in a town called Ideal, Georgia. It's the only thing ideal about Georgia. Am I right, Whisper? I'm not sure if we can find that one with an iPhone either, but we'll try something. So let me ask you this question in the trailer, and if you could, what is the link that we could find the movie trailer on?
Yeah, we have a website that includes information about the film as well as the blog. And you can get to that by going to www.tiny-themovie.com.
Excellent. I just put that into the chat room for folks that want to check that out. So that's tiny-movie.com. Excellent. And, you know, in the trailer, one of the best parts about the website, of course, is that you show some of the other living situations that y'all have encountered, but also that you have the trailer to the movie, which, guys, I would encourage y'all, if you're listening, please watch that trailer. It is really one of the best-made trailers for an independent movie that I've seen in a long time. It's just really quality stuff. And I like to associate myself with quality. I wouldn't have y'all on today if I didn't want to associate myself with quality. So it makes rednecks like me look better. So, you know, in the trailer you mentioned, Christopher, this is for you, in the trailer you mentioned thinking about putting down roots. You talk about for the first time in your life you're thinking about putting down roots. It's interesting that you say that because one of the initial allures of the tiny house movement is the idea of being stationary when you know one wants to, but also having the ability to still be nomadic. So I want to ask, do you see your tiny house as being stationary there outside of Boulder or something you can tote away when you get the itch to kind of hit the road and see America?
Well, for me, Colorado feels like home now. I actually grew up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., but I relate to the American West and Southwest in a way that I don't relate to any other place. And I see the tiny house in the land up in the mountains as being a place that will always be there, whether or not I, you know, live there permanently or not. It'll be a place that I can always come back to. The fact that the house is on wheels is actually more because of the housing code situation than really about the need to keep it mobile. Although I got to say it's a nice side benefit in case, you know, I wanted to, you know, find a different piece of land or something. I don't know, but I don't see that happening, but it keeps your options open.
And so, of course, the question then begs to be asked, actually. Tell us how many square feet, and this is where everyone likes to start asking questions once we talk about how many square feet are we talking about in this thing?
The house itself is about 130 square feet, not including the loft square footage. So it's about the size of a large bathroom, some people have said so.
Or about the size of a large parking space with a loft.
Unbelievable. So 130 square feet. I think it's very interesting because even before we started talking, some folks were asking some questions about, well, where do you put this and where do you put that and what do you do with this? And I could live in a tiny house as long as I have, you know, an outbuilding and I have a man cave and I have a this and that and the other. What else do you have out there? What else exists outside of Boulder where y'all's tiny house is going to be? Are you thinking about a bomb shelter? Are you going to drive a school bus out there and bury it somewhere? Are you going to have some chicken coops? What's going on out there? What else do you have out there?
Well, yeah, I would love to actually do some projects like that as well. You know, it all has to kind of start with the house because it's so remote and so far away from where I'm living at the moment that it's basically I can start there and you know, maybe add some things like a garden would be really great. I think, it'd be nice to actually have some chickens and things like that. It really depends, though, on, you know, the amount of time that I spend up there, and it's kind of hard to find work in that area.
And at this point, there's no well on the land. There would be an option to drill a well, but until there's running water, it's a little bit limited.
I see. So then I want to ask you, if there's no well, no running water, what are y'all doing for water? Are you having to take in potable water? Do you have a Berkey filter? How does that work out?
Well, it's funny because one of the interviews that we filmed with another tiny house in Colorado that had a similar situation, he said, you know, we don't have running water on the property, but we have walking water. And he was basically alluding to the fact that he kind of hauled in his own water, and it's going to be a similar situation at Christopher's house.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to bring it in. And actually, I toyed with the idea of if putting plumbing in and maybe, you know, hooking up to a cistern with a pump or you know, just so it'd be available in the future if I were to drill a well on the land. However, I kind of like the notion of not having running water because it really requires one to think about how much water they're consuming and where that water is coming from. And for me, part of the allure of living in a tiny house and building a tiny house is that it really requires you to think about, you know, all those little things that we take for granted down here, you know, in the big city, quote unquote, where, you know, what you're eating, where it comes from, what you're drinking, how much water you use to bathe. And it's that simplifying and getting close to the needs of, you know, your humanity that is really appealing. It's sort of like camping, but like in a way that's a lot more sustainable.
Sure, sure. I totally understand that. Whisper, let me ask you a question, because what they're talking about kind of makes me think of something. I have often thought of whether there would be a marked difference or a noticeable difference if I moved my chickens off of, you know, potable water that I pull out of the well to more of a rainwater harvest system. Do you know anyone that's using rainwater harvesting for their chicken houses?
Yeah, I've seen some coops that where they collect rainwater, or they'll collect rainwater off their. The only problem is that, and it was kind of when we got our two coops from My Amish Goods, we opted to just have a shingle roof instead of a metal roof to match our existing little barn that we wanted to kind of match. But after the fact, we thought, well, maybe we should have got a metal roof or change out to a metal roof on these coops and then put a water barrel and a gutter system on it so we could collect, and it would just run down into the barrel, and the barrel would automatically feed a waterer. And we thought about that. And because of all the chemicals that would be on a traditional shingle roof that then you would, you know, possibly wouldn't want to give your chickens for drinking water. And then, of course, you think about, well, if I had a metal roof, then wild birds could poop on the metal roof, the water could run through that poop, and then I could give who knows what kind of diseases to my birds by giving them water that was collected off the roof, but there's no telling, there's no saying that bird couldn't have pooped in the run. And then so there's all those variables, but I have seen some coops, yes, that have a gutter system on it that then goes into a barrel that then goes into a automatic float waterer system. So people do actually do that, yes.
Yeah, I was asking that because that's what I immediately thought of, because I've seen pictures of Christopher's tiny house, and it does have a metal roof. And, you know, they're making a lot of headway in terms of filtering water off of roofs, you know, down into a collection system and then reusing it, and even having it filter into the house, which, you know, Christopher, could be an option down the road if y'all thought you wanted to carry less water in and start utilizing whatever resources are available. I know here at Tiny Revolution we use rainwater harvesting for our gardens. So that's a very important thing. And someone in the chat room said, yeah, you know, it's all great, it's all gravy or whatever until the rain runs out. Well, life in general is pretty cool until the rain runs out. So,
yeah, actually, now that you mention it, I've actually looked into that a bit, and I have a barrel that I got specifically for that, and I was thinking about using the captured rainwater to water trees that I plan on planting. In Colorado, it was actually illegal to harvest rainwater up until about 2 or 3 years ago. But actually, it doesn't rain very much here, but you actually don't need all that much rain to have an efficient rainwater harvest system.
That's one of the things we realized early on is that, you know, I thought for sure, well, we're going to have 6, 7, 8 barrels of water, you know, 50-gallon barrels that are going to hold all this. But when you start doing the numbers, you know, tonnage by tons of water by square feet or by acreage or whatever, you really don't need all that much at all. In fact, we very, very seldom go through our water supply unless we go 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks without any sort of rain. So, yeah, so that's a good thing to think about, and it's definitely something that kind of connects us all, to further connects us all in terms of what we're doing on our own homestead. But let me get back to the trailer for just a second, Christopher. There's a clip with Jay Schaefer, who, for those in the Whisperer chat room that don't know Jay Schaefer, he's considered kind of the godfather of the tiny house movement. And he talks about the freedoms associated with tiny house living. Do y'all find it, Christopher Moret, either one, do y'all find this to be a bit paradoxical? I mean, a lot of Americans and a lot of people right here today listening would surely see, you know, 196 square feet or less as more of a prison than a paradise. So how in the tiny house movement do we, you know, does that become less paradoxical?
I think that, you know, one of the main freedoms that people talk about when they talk about tiny houses is really, you know, the freedom to spend, you know, time and energy and resources on things other than, you know, your physical stuff and the houses that we live in. And, you know, a lot of the people that we've talked to around the country who live in small spaces, you know, across the board, they're always saying that because they're spending, you know, less money on their house and less time maintaining their house, they have all of this extra time and resources to, you know, spend with their family or get involved with their communities or, you know, spend outdoors or start their own business or do creative projects. And, you know, they have freedom to kind of cultivate their lives in other ways other than just, you know, the house that they live in.
Christopher, did you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the primary thought behind that. And I'd also say that for some people, the fact that they build them on wheels is also very alluring. You know, if you don't really have a big mortgage, yeah, you're definitely free to travel or you're free to pursue the life that you want to live. You know, it's I spent some time down in Mexico once and stayed with some really, you know, poor families compared to your typical American family, I'd say. And they seemed really happy. And I was like trying to figure out why that is. And really, you know, when you don't have a whole lot of stuff, you end up spending more time with each other and building community. And you sort of export your home to your neighborhood. And actually we interviewed this woman in Berkeley who's a professor of urban planning at UC Berkeley. And she said the exact same thing, that tiny houses really you export that feeling of home.
Absolutely. And Whisper, I'm going to bring you in for a second because I'm always fascinated by the pictures you put up of your homestead and y'all's decision to move to what a lot of people would consider a less than, pardon the pun, ideal place to live. Based on the poverty you told us, you know, the poverty mm-hmm. percentage you told us about and that sort of thing. So when you hear of all this tiny house talk and tiny community talk, and even when we talk about tiny revolution, what are some of your thoughts in terms of where we're at in the nation regarding community living and regarding investing in the community and having them invest back in you and letting go of this kind of corporate whitewashed American dream to really just live life and be part of relationship?
It's interesting. I see that a little bit here. And in fact, I'll quote somebody here locally that I don't even know what to call the place they live in, an old shanty or just it's just really no electricity, no running water, and it's they're full time residents, and you know and they don't have work other than odd jobs, and which like a lot of people here in this area, and they're, you know, believe it or not, some do want better, some don't, some are content. They're you know, like I have a little food I have a beer every now and then, and I'm happy. No one's telling me what to do. I can do what I want. I'm not strapped to have to go to work if I don't have to. It's interesting. There is a wide spectrum of that, from whether they're kind of stuck in that position and can't get up and out, and so they've just kind of accepted it, or they're truly happy with it, or it's just and everything revolves here. It's a whole totally different world in many aspects, but everything here seems to have revolved around the first of the month, the first day to the third day, because that's when all the government checks are issued and they pick them up in the mail. So everything, the whole their whole world has evolved around the first of the month. And I started thinking about that, and I said, like, you know, you see the gathering downtown at the post office, and they're all heading to town to the bank to cash their checks, or there's people that are cash their checks locally for $5 or whatever. And you know, you think about that, and I'm like, that's not unlike Atlanta. You know, Friday's payday. Everybody goes, and they you know, so that's – but here, it's – I mean, it's the whole town almost revolves around that, but some are happy where they're at. Some and some think, hey, you know, they live in an already tiny house. Just like when I've said this many a times, if it ever hit the fan where we used to live, if it ever hit the fan, economic crash, terrorist, whatever, and we were out of power or water or food or whatever the case may be. My neighbors up there would be in a world of hurt when I hear them complain that their cable's out for an hour. They start getting irate. When I'm down here and I talk to my friends and see my friends down here and the people and see what they have and what they're living with, there would be no difference. What's the difference? How would my life change if this happened or that happened or the economy crashed or the dollar tanked or whatever? You know, it's like other than, you know, possibly affecting the checks they get from the feds every month. But they're already, you know, doing without. There wouldn't be a difference in their day at all. But up in where we used to live in Atlanta, they'd be in a world of hurt. But here they're already living that every day.
Right.
So it's,
right.
Whether that's the answer you want or not, but that's a
yeah.
big challenge I see here is that it's you don't have the McMansions or any of that, and by far a lot of people who even could afford a McMansion, old time farmers with lots of land and money, they have no need or want for that whatsoever in most all cases.
Gotcha. Well, look, let me ask Chris for a question. Tiny house, heating the tiny house. Y'all are going with a Dickinson, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And for those who don't know, Dickinson is a, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, it's a boat company, or traditionally a boat company, and they make a lovely series of wall heaters that vent out of the tiny house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how many BTUs,
yeah.
but they look beautiful. They fit the space very well. And they're kind of the choice heater of tiny housers for one reason or another. Go ahead.
Yeah. The Dickinson, they're great. They're actually one of the sponsors of our film. And they're part of the reason that they're, I think, so popular in the tiny house movement is that they put out the appropriate amount of heat. There's two different models that you can get in the propane variety, and that's the 9,000 BTU model and the 12,000 BTU model. And if you look at other propane, traditional propane stoves, or even just a wood stove, they usually put out a lot more heat than that, and it's actually quite overkill for the small space. And they're beautiful. They're stainless steel, and you can actually see the fire, so it's not just your typical you know, radiant heater that you get like a fireplace feel to it.
Yeah, we use we have a propane wall heater with an adjustable thermostat. It's 10,000 BTU, works perfectly for our space, and we like it because it's a blue flame unit. So it kind of gives us, if you squint your eyes just right, it makes it look like a fireplace. so we prefer that for now. You know, it's interesting because here's what I'm seeing. Christopher and Moret, I'm not sure if y'all are in the chat room or not, but here's what I'm seeing, and I see this a lot, and I would love for y'all to speak on it a bit. There is a mentality that comes along with tiny houses, and that is what I call the antithesis mentality, and that's the American dream or the right to own. I have the right to have this. I've worked hard, so I have the right to do this or the right to do that, and I need a big space because, you know, because I work hard and I like to come home and have things and that sort of stuff. The way I see it, and then it's open to y'all because I want to know y'all's thoughts on it. The way I see it is I have everything I want. We don't lack for anything. We have top-of-the-line cookware. We have wonderful kitchen accessories. We have a sleep number bed, which cost us more than some people's cars. We have nice flooring. I use all Apple products, including the iPhone I'm talking on right now. So it's not about the mentality of we choose to live this way or we're out hugging a tree somewhere because we're dirty earth people and we want to live tiny because, you know, that's just the way it's got to be. And I've got to go now because I'm going to sit around the circle and take my shirt off and beat a drum. So answer that for me, if you will, Christopher Moret. What are y'all's thoughts as new as you are to the tiny house movement and to the thought, and, of course, because of the people you've seen as you go around? How do you feel about that? What are your thoughts about the antithesis mentality?
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, we're so interested in this idea of home and what makes a good home. And, you know, I think we've seen that everyone does it in a different way and everyone prioritizes different things. And, you know, I think that what we hope is going to come out of the film is that people, you know, will take these innovations and, you know, this creative way of living in a small space and be able to scale that up and apply it to their lives, you know, no matter what square footage feels right to them. And I think the most important thing is really, you know, just taking the time to stop and think, you know, the amount of space I'm living in and how much stuff I have, like, is it really what I want? Or am I just kind of doing it because I think I'm supposed to, or because I think I want it?
Yeah, I think the film really invites the audience to actually just think about and be aware of the environment they choose to inhabit or they choose to live in, and sort of suggest that that can be a reflection of your values and perhaps should be, and that, you know, for them to think about that and then incorporate their values into the way they live.
Yeah, absolutely. And Moret, you that was a beautiful segue into what I want to talk about next, because we could talk all day long about actually building the tiny house, but that conversation has been had many times. I want to ask you specifically, because you're the one that kind of issued the challenge to Christopher, why a movie? Why make a movie about building a tiny house? I mean, the joke there, of course, is obviously, well, that ought to be a short movie. But why a movie, and who do you see as your audience? Is it people like we're talking to today? Is it people with a lot of money to burn? Is it those same people, you know, beating on their drums that I talked about earlier? Who is the audience?
I mean, I really think the audience is, you know, everyone who has a home or cares about home, which is really everyone. You know, I mean, if you think about the idea of home, it's kind of like this magic word in the English language where you hear it, you know, and you're kind of like, oh yeah, that feels good. And you know, what we're really trying to get across is just kind of an exploration of why that's important, you know, and how we feel, you know, how we know that we're at home when we're there, and how we create it. And you know, in terms of making a film, visually, these small spaces are so fascinating because you walk in and you know that every single detail and design element and every single thing in the house was thought about. You know, it's either necessary because it's functional, or it's necessary because it makes the person feel good, or it's necessary because it's beautiful. And, you know, visually speaking, it's a really quick and easy way of kind of presenting the idea of home, because the people who live in these small spaces have really thought about it because they've had to.
Yeah, and our approach to doing a film, at least the way I see it, is that, like you said, it's talking about how tiny houses are built has been done. There's a lot of blogs out there, and those blogs are really targeted at people who already feel that way, and they're the ones that are most likely to read them. And creating a film is really a way to reach a wider audience and actually convey both visually, you know, as well as like sort of philosophically, why people do it, you know. And while we might not convert everybody to live in tiny houses, it gives an opportunity to really, for the audience to think about it and think about what they want to take and what they want to leave and what they want to incorporate in their own lives.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I want to ask you now about part of the way y'all are funding the production of this movie is through Kickstarter, which is, for those who don't know, Kickstarter is a microfinancing organization. And I don't know about y'all, but in the you know, right now with Occupy Wall Street and with all of that going on and just the economy where it is in general, I think a lot about microfinancing, and I think it's the answer to a lot of situations. And in some situations, it used to be called just mom-and-pop store credit, essentially, helping out your neighbor until they could do something on their own. So tell me, why Kickstarter? How did y'all come about choosing Kickstarter, and is that part of the larger plan, or did it seem like this was the easiest way to go at the time?
I mean, I've been really excited about Kickstarter for a long time because it's a place, you know, where I could always go and see all of these really exciting, creative projects that people were, you know, kind of just doing. They were kind of just taking the leap and, you know, doing the projects that they had in their minds. And so when we were looking for a way to raise funds for this project, it seemed like a natural fit to kind of, you know, spark a conversation and really get people interested and get people involved. And in addition to, you know, asking for money on Kickstarter, we're also giving out a series of kind of thank you gifts, including, you know, signed copies of the DVD, invites to the online premiere of the film, you know, even a weekend in the completed tiny house. So it's really a way to kind of create a community around this project and, you know, kind of get people invested and involved.
Excellent. Thank you. I believe it's time for us to go to a commercial break real quick.
That is correct.
I think Whistler has to pay some bills or something, so he's going to play some commercials for us.
Yep, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
And one more.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, V-E-R-M-X-USA.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have exactly 15 minutes to go, and so we've got a few more questions from Andrew Odom for our guest today, talking about tiny homes and living a minimalist lifestyle. You're both back live now.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. We are back, and I always forget we have such a great audience. I always forget that the main theme of this is backyard poultry. And so someone just came on and asked a question about some 9-week pullets, and I was like, why are they asking about pullets? But then I remembered because that's what we're about. At any rate, we are joined today by Christopher Carson Smith and Marette Mueller, who together are putting out a wonderful movie about tiny house living and its role in society and its impact on the economy and its impact on the earth and all of those things wrapped up. But we've been so serious so far, I wanted to kind of break some things up. I wanted to ask a couple of questions that always people want to ask Whisper, but very seldom will actually just ask. So Christopher, Marette, are y'all ready for what I'll call the hot seat round?
We were born ready.
Excellent.
Great, right, Andrew.
So it seems that everyone really wants to know basically one thing about tiny houses. Do the bathrooms or the wet baths or the facilities or the toilet or the bucket or whatever you call it, does that little area have a door? And if it does not have a door, how do you achieve privacy, or do you achieve privacy?
Well, I guess I'll feel this one because Marette's looking at me like she doesn't want to. I really think it's what's one great thing about tiny houses is that people usually build their own or at least design their own. And so it can really be any way that you want. And my tiny house will definitely have a door on the bathroom because I'm kind of a private kind of guy, you know. And it can. Some people do curtains, some people do doors, and some people, I assume, might not have a door at all. But you don't have to sacrifice anything in a tiny house, or at least, you know, it's depending on your level of comfortability with sacrifice. It's really, you know, you can make it as much like a real house as you want, or it can be as much like camping as you want.
Although I do have to correct you for just a second, most people do sacrifice the exhaust vents that are in normal sticks and bricks homes bathrooms. So there is a bit of a sacrifice there because it's very difficult with a sleeping loft to fit in that vent system correctly.
I've seen other tiny houses that have put them in. I think Jay's tumbleweed had one. Not to disagree with you or anything, but
yeah, I personally am not going to put a vent in our bathroom for the sole reason of not giving anyone the comfort of being able to be quiet about anything. I think that's the funniest thing in the world. So I'm not going to allow anyone.
Well, it is a really small bathroom, and there is a window. So if you think about ventilation per square foot, it's probably fairly well ventilated.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Are y'all going with a traditional flush commode? Because I know the water system is different for y'all. Or are you using a compost toilet? And if you're using a compost toilet, whose job will it be to dump that bucket?
definitely Marette's. I think part of, like I said earlier, part of the reason I went the tiny house route is because I intentionally wanted to simplify and to feel a little bit closer, you know, to, you know, like something about taking care of those daily routines of cooking and hygiene and where do you get your water from. I find that appealing. It sort of puts things into perspective. And so I actually sort of intentionally went the route of a composting toilet, and not even one of those fancy Nature's Head type. I'm drawn to the Lovable Loo, or you know, which is basically just a 5-gallon bucket, you know, inside a toilet seat. But I'm assured it's perfectly sanitary, and it involves the whole composting system that we'll need to set up.
And I have to say, Christopher and I have similar conversations right now about who's going to empty the cat's litter box. So I foresee those continuing with the composting toilet.
Yes.
The composting toilet, you still have to empty that somewhere, I guess, out on the property, it sounds like. Dig a hole. So, Andrew, I remember you saying one of the very first shows we've ever had that nowhere in America is an outhouse legal anymore. They're all outlawed. It's against the law to have an outhouse. So why?
You are exactly right.
So what's, I don't see if what the difference is. If I have to take that and still go dump it somewhere, why couldn't just build a little shed around wherever I'm dumping it and build a little chair there? If it's all going to the same place.
Pardon me for my crassness, but it's probably because the same amount of poop that we're currently talking about is the amount that fills our politicians. but really, I think the idea is that if you have an outhouse, it denotes a kind of standard of living that most municipalities don't want to condone. It has more to do with the aesthetics of it than it actually does with the sewage and the plumbing issue.
Sure.
What's interesting is people get a little squeamish when talking about composting or humanure or something like that, but you know, I'm looking right now at, I don't know, probably 27, 28 people here in the chat room that deal with manure on a regular basis and have to figure out where it goes and how to best use it and that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's one of those things that people like to not think about. We like to just say, hey, government, build a wastewater plant and deal with it. But it's a very real part of life, and it's interesting how the tiny house community deals with it. Same way, you know, that we deal with livestock manure and with chicken manure and things like that. So I think that's kind of interesting. But look, I want to ask this too, Christopher. Now, Marette sends you to the doghouse, okay? Let's say you don't empty the cat box and she says you have to go to the doghouse. In a house so small, where exactly is that doghouse?
Well, I guess it would be outside, and that might be a problem in the wintertime. But actually, I think that's, you're kind of getting at perhaps a deeper point, in that when you live in a really small place, it really forces, you know, you to work out things in a way that you can co-inhabit, based, you know, more peacefully. I feel like, you know, I've noticed the same thing in a small town versus a big city, where in a big city, if you have a problem with somebody, you just don't ever have to really see them again. Whereas in a small town, you see those people over and over and over again. So it really forces you to preserve your relationship and learn how to communicate. And I think that's even more so in a tiny house situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, you know, it's a silly little question, but that's kind of where I was going with it. I wanted you to talk about, because, you know, a lot of folks, I've heard, spoken with a lot of folks and heard a lot of folks say that, you know, when you have a big house, you have privacy, you have places to go, places to escape. It's not always true. When you have a piece of heart and a piece of mind, and I'm not trying to get esoteric or become anyone's yogi or anything like that, but when you have a sense of peace within yourself, when you have that calmness, you can escape with someone sitting right next to you, literally touching your skin. I did it when I lived in Brooklyn. I did it on the subway on a daily basis. So it really is about your mindset, I think, and about where you're at internally as to, quote-unquote, where your doghouse is. But I have another. I have one more kind of hot seat question, and this was actually asked earlier on in the chat room, so apparently lots of people want to know about it. Last question before this next to last question. Who has more shoes to have to find storage for? Is it you, Marette, or is it you, Christopher?
You know, it's funny. Both Christopher and I have moved so many times that, I mean, I think I've moved, you know, maybe four times in the last 2 years. And every time I move, I've had to, like, really pare down my stuff, which has been great preparation. I do probably have more shoes than Christopher.
I don't know. I might disagree with you on that. I don't have a lot of shoes, you know, like strappy sandals or anything like that. But I do have a pair of shoes for every recreation or sport I'm engaged in, which is actually, there's a few. So I have, you know, biking shoes, and then I got my cowboy boots, of course. And then, you know, and then I've got my normal shoes, and then I have my snowshoes, and, you know, so the more outdoor activities you get into, the more shoes you seem to acquire.
I hear that. Whisperer, I've always wanted to ask you that question. How many pairs of shoes do you have, man?
Well, I was just going through a box yesterday since the move, and I was like, why do I have all these shoes? And so it's I'm kind of like Christopher there. It's like, okay, I've got two pairs of cowboy boots, one to stomp around in, one to go to church in. I've got a black pair of tactical boots to wear with my camo pants, or I could wear them in the garden, but, you know, so I got that, you know, the tactical boots. I've got just my good old around the overalls wearing gardening, farming boots that I've got. I got one pair of shoes to go with my one suit that I own in case I have to go to a wedding or a funeral, which, you know, what's the difference? And then I've got I love you, Jen. You're the best. And then I have a couple of I got a pair of tennis shoes. You know, I didn't wear any shorts this past summer. I bared through the summer South Georgia heat in just overalls, so I didn't even wear them. But a pair of tennis. So I don't know. You count them up: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have about 7 or 8 pairs, actually. And I can tell you, in the last 365 days, I've wore one pair out of those 8 pairs. So obviously something needs to be done as far as getting rid of some of them that I do not wear. Now you know.
Definitely. I like that. Well, I'll be honest with y'all. That's why I quit sports altogether. I couldn't afford the shoes any longer. So, no, I'm just joking. I actually am, I think I am a tree hugger in the sense that I pretty much either wear my, my rancher boots, or I wear my Birkenstocks all year long. I can't stand tennis shoes. I can't stand dress shoes. So if my wife says we're going out, I'm one of those guys that puts on, like, you know, colored socks under his Birkenstocks. Otherwise, I just wear the same old ranchers every single day. I figure they've already got poop all over them. What's a little more going to do?
Exactly.
So my last question, because I really have appreciated having Christopher and Marette here today, and I hope some
folks
are listening.
We've got about 90 seconds left, so go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, the last question then is actually not all that relevant. So I do just want to give them a chance to tell us where we can find them online to find out more about the movie.
That'll be great. Please go ahead and do that for our listeners.
All right. So as we mentioned before, tiny-themovie.com is our website. And then from there, you can find our Facebook page, our Kickstarter page. You can pre-order a copy of the DVD. You can see the trailer, all that stuff. That's tiny-themovie.com.
I've got that. And you're on Facebook as well.
We are.
Perfect. We've got the links up in the chat room, and of course, all of our listeners that listen to the archive will be able to get that as well. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining us, and Andrew, and bringing on the guest, and just, it's really eye-opening. I think it's great to do shows like this because it lets people see that this is a movement that's kind of like the backyard poultry movement. It's probably started small, but it's getting bigger and bigger, and more momentum of people learn about it, as well as with the economy, possibly edging people on to do that as well. So thank you, all of you, for coming on today and educating myself and our listeners about this movement that's taking off. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Whisperer. We appreciate it.
You bet. Y'all have a great day. And folks, tune in tomorrow because we've got another great episode of Garden Wise Living with Arlena. We'll be talking about gardening tomorrow right here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us.
Ha ha ha.